Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go. I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to,
Strange Realms to the Universe. I got a great guest tonight. He's the Wisconsin Chief Investigator from MUFON. He's a writer. I met our guest last year at a conference, and a great guy. He was telling me about his biography about Dr. J. Allen Hynek, which I'm really excited about. Let's bring him on. Hey, Mark. Hey, I appreciate you being on time. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
I was reading, you're a man of many titles. I was reading your bio here, and Next Generation, very impressive.
Thank you. It goes way back. That's kind of ancient history, but I'm proud of it.
That's definitely a part of history, especially. Classic. And then, also, I'll tell you why I wanted to bring you on tonight. There was a article you wrote, I'd say about maybe a month ago, about the infamous slides. And
yeah.
I got to admit, Mark, you're the only one, in the field that, the people I brush shoulders with that's actually said anything about this. And I want to commend you on that. And for our listeners at home, you wanna go into it a little bit better?
Sure. Where do I start?
that's a real question, right?
I mean, really. Well, we all know what happened in Mexico City on May 5th or whenever it was, and we all know how bad it made all of ufology look. And I was just doing some thinking after that and thinking, well, I wonder if this is going to affect. I wonder if these guys who are on stage in Mexico City. I wonder if their speaking engagements are going to start to dry up. And I just started looking at schedules of upcoming UFO events. And I've been a member of MUFON for, I think, 3 years now. I just renewed for another year. I'm a field investigator and an assistant state director here in Wisconsin. So I looked on the schedule for the MUFON's big symposium coming up in September. And there was Jaime Maussan on the list of speakers. And it didn't really say very specifically what Mr. Maussan would be talking about at the symposium. But I just thought, I'm a member of this organization. I have a voice in this organization, and I should use it. So I sent a letter to Jan Harzen, who's the international director of MUFON, and I just said, I don't think you should have this guy be a presenter at the MUFON symposium. If our organization is supposed to be about a scientific approach to UFO research, and if we want to be seen as honest and competent, then it doesn't really do our brand any favors to be having people like Jaime Maussan talking at our big symposium.
It really broke my heart. It really did. That whole thing. Tore me apart, Mark, was I knew Jaime's research for many years. I mean, I would need a translator, of course, or, watch a video with subtitles. But, he really done a, and before this, post slides, you know. Mm-hmm. But before, I thought that he'd done, you know, a lot and, you know, really opened up the doors in the Latin community, you know, in the Hispanic community. Because if you ask anybody about Jaime, they do know about him, you know. And, you know, but it really, the thing about whenever we got the picture with the photo edit shop and got to see that it was indeed a mummified infant. That's whenever it hits real hard in your throat. And then it's just, especially if you are a fellow researcher and, you know, and you called it a brand, and you're exactly right when you say it's a brand. Somebody else I brush over with told me the same thing about the brand, and, you know, and that's what it is. And you can't use, not only can you not sell snake oil, but I don't think that, and I don't really think that there's, you know, it's all about professionalism and not, you know, it's everything's so sexualized. And so where can people go to where it can be scientific and, you know, serious?
Yeah.
Because there's other things, you know, other activities for other people to do. But, you know, whenever it comes to UFOs, you know, I try to go into the approach of, you know, open-minded skepticism, but with a non-biased approach. But it it really offends me, though, whenever I thought of a lot of people in high regard, and then something like that happens, it kind of makes you sit back and think.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah. Well, I sent this letter to Jan Harzin, and he wrote back and said, well, give me a call, let's talk. So we talked on the phone, and he said, first of all, I just want you to understand that we invited Mr. Masson to talk at our symposium months and months ago before this Roswell slide stuff really became a big news story. And he said, and that's not why we invited him. We invited him because over the course of his career, he has amassed this huge collection of photos and videos of unexplained aerial phenomena.
Oh, yeah.
His fans have sent to him. So Jan said, that's why we invited him. We wanted him to show his photo and video collection because think that's, you know, that has some historical and some scientific value to it. So, okay, I get that. You invited him many months ago, and he's going to be talking about something completely different. I get that. But, you know, Jan and I went on to talk about, well, are there things that could be done short of just saying, okay, you can't come anymore? Are there things that could be done to sort of counterbalance people from the Roswell slides crew? And I said, well, what if anytime one of those people is invited on stage to talk, what if there is someone else invited to talk at the same time, or it's part of a panel where you have a whole bunch of at least two different people, but maybe more, maybe three or four or five people with differing opinions on the Roswell incident and differing opinions on the Roswell slide. And you can actually have an honest debate about whether they have any value, whether they're scientifically, you know, credible. You know, and that way you're not just letting these guys get up on stage and just spout all this stuff that they always have to say about Roswell. You know, at least you've got a counterpoint. And Jan said, well, you know, you're right. That's a good idea. We could, you know, maybe we could even find time in the schedule this September to do something like that. Well, I haven't heard back from him. And I was just checking the schedule on their website, and I don't see anything on the schedule that really addresses that. And I probably should have checked in with Jan this week in preparation for this show tonight, just so I could tell you more about that. So, I'm doubtful that they'll actually do that, but.
Oh, yeah. but you're spot on. I mean, really, just to the point of, let people get their money's worth. When if they're paying for an event, But they're, you know what screws it up, Mark? I won't be just straight up. It's this people for way too long they go to this this one go to authority. You know, and in this day and age, in 2015, you know as well as I do, there's a lot of good people that's in the various fields of research, especially UFO community. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, three letters causes into fear being made fun of or being some kind of calamity or joke. And that's the thing and I see where you're going with spin with this is, you want just like straight hardcore facts and a great presentation without no filler and BS, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that would be the ideal. I don't know if it's possible, but I'm glad you mentioned that, though, because something that came up in the comments on my blog when I was writing a lot about this in late May and early June was one or two commenters said, well, you know, you got to remember, Mark, this is really an entertainment business and all these guys are selling is entertainment. And, you know, I've thought about that a lot since then. And I think that's a good point. And it kind of came up again this week when I got a couple invitations, I think through Facebook, to this event in Edinburgh, Texas, coming up in a couple of weeks, the Out of This World UFO Conference and Festival.
Awesome.
And I kept seeing those things and thinking, oh, God, come on. See, this is the problem. It's a festival. It's not serious. And I was getting kind of annoyed about it. But then I took another look at it, and I gave it some more thought. And I thought, well, you know, maybe these people have got the right idea. Because at least they're saying, honestly, right up front, it's a festival. It's all about entertainment. And they're even separating, you know, they're saying conference and festival. So they're even kind of saying that these two, the serious research side of it and the silly entertainment side of it, can actually, you know, coexist side by side at the same event. So, you know, maybe they're onto something. And then I looked at their speakers roster, and, you know, their headline speaker is George Noory. That's about as establishment UFO industry as you can get. But then the second speaker, Lauren, is an actor, Mark Goddard, the guy who played Major Don West on Lost in Space in the 1960s. And I just thought, okay, that's the festival part right there, right? Because there's nothing serious about having a guy from Lost in Space at your UFO conference. What does he know about UFOs? Nothing. So, you know, I just kept thinking about that and thinking, well, you know, maybe what we need to pay more attention to is just sort of separating the entertainment part of this whole field. Separate that from the research part of things. Because I think the problem is, to most people looking in from the outside, they can't tell the difference because it's always sort of thrown together. They can't tell the difference between the serious research side of it and the people who are really trying to do some real work here and the entertainment side of it with people who are just, you know, trying to make a quick buck off of showing off some dumb slides. Most people can't tell the difference. So I think, you know, I think those of us in this field, and I don't know how yet, my thinking hasn't gone that far along, but it makes sense to me that at least one place to start is just do a better job of, you know, keeping that entertainment in another room, you know.
You know, you mentioned the entertainment part. That's where it began. You know who we can blame for all this? And all my favorite movies growing up, Steven Spielberg made. And think about it. Extraterrestrials. Or even, Back to the Future, one of my favorite movies, time travel aspect. Uh-huh. I mean, just go through his career, especially when he first started, he brought all them elements in there. And a lot of them things, especially the E.T. Situation allegedly really happened. But, you know, I'm talking about they get these events and they get these different things and then they jazz it up in the Hollywood on the Zog wheel, and then it's getting, and then it's the time we get to it, and the Men in Black, I got to mention Men in Black too. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You get that, and when you mention it, they laugh at it. You know, they're like, oh,
yeah,
you know.
You're right.
And then that's where there needs to be more seriousness, man, and that's why I wanted to bring you on, because, dude, you're straight up the only one telling the hell it is right now, and, you know, I got to tip a hat to you on that. I really do.
Well, thanks. And, you know, full disclosure here, I try to be entertaining in my blog, because for one thing, that's the only way I could ever continue to write it. I need to be having fun writing it. So I need to entertain myself, but I also try to entertain my audience as well. So I'm not trying to make some big claim that I'm a bit, you know, I'm like leading the charge for scientific purity here, you know, but, you know, I do think there's a case to be made. And I was also just looking today at the website for, you know, the big Roswell event that they have every 4th of July. And I had forgotten this. They call that a festival too. They just call it the Roswell UFO Festival. And that's all it's pure entertainment. They have a parade. They have a costume contest. They have an art exhibit, you know, an alien art
probably
exhibit.
Probably like
there's
cardboard
nothing
UFOs or
yeah,
cardboard
you bet.
UFOs.
You bet.
And, you know, all the inflatable UFOs. That's a big popular one too.
Yeah, and the big inflatable green aliens.
Yeah, the green ones. Yeah.
Those are great. I think what I have a problem with is, and I this is kind of the tagline for my blog, that ambiguity is more convincing to me than certainty. And what I mean by that is, whenever somebody shows up and says, "I solved it, I figured it out, I have the smoking gun," I'm not going to say skeptical about it, because people are really throwing that word around and misusing it in a lot of ways. But I'm dubious about it. I need to know more. If somebody says I got a smoking gun, I'm going to need to see some proof of that. And until I see some proof, I'm just not going to buy it. And I think, and especially when somebody says, "I've solved it, I've got a smoking gun, and I'll share it with you if you buy a ticket to my big event in Mexico City."
Or buy
then
the book.
I really don't trust
you. I have all the secrets, but you have to buy the book, especially when they get on radio shows. You know what I'm saying? Just like, it's like trying to, like, Darwin, just give them little crumbs. You know, it's a tease.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be teased, Mark.
Yeah, and again, full disclosure, I am writing a book, and when my book, you know, hopefully gets published eventually, obviously I'm going to want to sell a whole lot of copies of it too. So I just want to put that out there.
Of course. We discussed this last year outside of the UFO convention. I was talking about the book I was going to write about cults and stuff. And he was like, "That's kind of dangerous." I always remembered that, man. I remember you was telling me about your book with about J. Allen Hynek, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and I just thought that was really awesome. Now, tell us about the process of that a little bit. I was really interested about that since you told me since day one.
Oh, well, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate that. It's a whole new thing for me. I've been a script writer for a long, long time, but this is my first time writing a book, and it's a huge learning experience. It's a whole lot more work than I expected I'm writing a book about Hynek's career. So there's just an incredible amount of research that goes into it. I mean, I'm really lucky in one regard, because so much of Hynek's professional records are in Chicago, right in my backyard. You know, the CUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies,
live in Chicago right now.
You are? Aha, okay. Well, I'm in Wisconsin right now.
Where's the place at? I'm gonna go check it out, man. Where's it at?
well, just check their website. I don't know the address. I don't have the address off the top of my head, but archives are in a couple of people. They're in Mark Rodiger's basement and Mary Kastner's basement. But then also there's Northwestern University, where Hynek was an astronomer from 1960 to, I think, 1984. And he did a lot of his UFO work while he was working at Northwestern. So there's a lot of material in their archives. Hynek also went to college at the University of Chicago. So there is a whole lot of material in their archives. The research has been, you know, in one sense, been really, really a lot of work. But in another sense, it's all kind of been right there in front of me, all around the Chicago area. So it's, in that sense, it's been pretty easy. The trick is, I reached a point where I decided it was time to try to find a literary agent, and that has turned out to be a very, very long, slow process. And that's really what has slowed the whole process down. I could easily be done writing the book right now, but that's not the way it works with a nonfiction book. You need to find an agent, and then you need to have that agent shop the book proposal out and sample chapters out to publishers. So I am hoping that I'm very, very close to signing with an agent. I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say anymore. But that's been a slow process, but hopefully once we get past that hurdle, then it's full speed ahead.
Hey, well, you know, the thing about it is too, Mark, is when you have especially a great, guy like Dronic and everything that he's done, all his contributions, it's like when you're getting all this research and information about him, are you like thinking in your head, oh, man, this is going to be like a 700-page book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Believe me. And that's one of the hardest things.
It might be even in a series or something. You know what I mean? Because it's just like all that, all the information coming in, and it's just like putting it all together in the literary form. You know, it's really tough. And as a writer myself, it really is. And it's just like especially some days you can be so all about it, and then it's just the writing thing. It's every writer, it's like a Freemason. No one asks one, right?
Yeah, you're right. And you're right, putting all that information together, it's like building the world's biggest jigsaw puzzle, and it can be really fun and rewarding, and it can also kind of drive you crazy. And I'll tell you what, one of the biggest surprises I've had in researching this book had to do with the famous 1966 Michigan swamp gas case. And I went into that, and that was one of the first things I researched, because I discovered, when I started researching Hynek's career, I discovered that that one case was probably the most well-documented UFO case from his entire career. And I went into it kind of thinking what everybody always thinks about the Dexter Hillsdale sighting, that Hynek really blew it when he said it could have been swamp gas. It was either a huge, stupid mistake, or he was just really telling a bald-faced lie to try to cover things up for the Air Force. I mean, that's what I thought going into it. Then I started doing the research, and I discovered that's not true at all. It was an incredibly complicated situation, and I truly believe that when Hynek said it could have been swamp gas, I think he said the absolute right thing. Based on the evidence he had in front of him at that exact time, I think he did the right thing. And it came up just last week. I'm just going to put in a plug for myself here, even though it's a week late. I did my first interview on a cable TV show, and it just aired a week ago last Friday on the Travel Channel. The show is called Mysteries at the Monument, and they wanted to do a story that involved Hynek's swamp gas incident. And this producer called me up. She found out I was writing the book about Hynek. She called me up and she just said, "Hey, I wondered if you could just clarify something for me." She goes, "We want to tell the story about how the swamp gas case caused Hynek to change his mind about UFOs. Can you tell me if that's true or not?" And I said, "Well, it's not exactly that simple." I said, "It's true that he did change his mind, but he had been changing his mind for years leading up to that. So you can't say it happened all at once and it happened just because of the swamp gas case." So, you know, we ended up doing an interview. This was like over a year ago. The show finally airs last Friday. Sure enough,
what do they say in the segment? They say, well, Hynek changed his mind that week. You know, it was this epiphany. I'm like, no, I told you that's not the way it happened. So,
well,
you know, fighting for truth
are.
Is really
you know,
hard.
It takes
yeah,
so
it
long
is, exactly.
It takes so long for them to air. And when it does,
yeah.
you don't know what's going to be added. Or, and then you might
yeah.
be talking for 45
yeah.
minutes, and then it's like 3 seconds, like a face
yeah,
shot, or they have you walking in the
that's
background.
That's pretty much true. I mean, I'll give them, I will say, I didn't, you know, I was a little frustrated that they oversimplified the story. But they didn't seriously compromise the story. The facts are still the facts, and they presented the facts. So
that's what's important.
That's what's important. But you know, that's what I need to do in the book, though, is say, you know what, not so fast. That's not exactly how
it
happened.
Here's
how it happened.
That, you know, take it farther, take it that next step farther. And then, you know, that's what's awesome. And, you know, I know you don't toot your own horn or anything, but I want to, you know, just from a outsider looking in, I wanted to, you know, or observationist, you know, people's getting the buzz, you know, it's talking about around. So, I mean, I think that there needs to be more people. You know, like, you know, I've always been, you know, one to, you know, call it like I see it, you know, and I always like seeing other, you know, researchers and investigators, and even, you know, even if they're, you know, with MUFON or Rogue or, you know, whatever, you know, the thing about it is finding the information, getting the answers, and learning from each other, you know, that's how we do,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually got a situation like that right now. I've had in my MUFON investigation work, I've had a whole bunch of historical cases have been coming through lately, and one of them that I just have been researching just in the last couple of weeks took place in 1980. A man who was in the Army, he was in an infantry battalion in 1980, and his battalion was sent here to Wisconsin to help guard Fort McCoy, which is a military training base in central Wisconsin. And he was part of he and his comrades actually had to form a human fence because they were using Camp McCoy to house all these Cuban refugees. And the Cuban refugees had busted down the fence trying to escape. So the soldiers had to form a human fence, and they had to stand out there surrounding the base 24 hours a day. Well, one of the nights he's out there, he sees this strange object appear from behind the trees, and it moves across the sky, and he sees occupants inside it. And his description of this was just incredible. I talked with this guy on the phone for a really long time. So this is something that happened, you know, this is something that happened 35 years ago. And, you know, I'm talking with this guy, and I'm just thinking, boy, it's such a shame that we'd never be able to find any other witnesses, you know, to verify what he's saying. And then out of the blue, he says, now, you know, Mark, I have a list of the duty roster from that week. I've got the names of everybody who was, because he was, I can't remember his title, but he was like, he worked for the lieutenant in charge of the battalion.
Yeah, like a higher rank.
Yeah.
Higher-ranking, go ahead.
So he had access to some of the documentation, and he had kept copies of this duty roster. So he's like, I don't really have the resources to go looking for these people, but he's like, if MUFON could maybe try to find some of these folks, you know, maybe you could find another witness. And I'm calling in the troops at MUFON. I've been talking with my state director and some of the other folks who deal with MUFON on a national level, and just asking, okay, how do we do this? Because he sent me the list. I've got this duty roster. It's got like 50 names on it. But, you know, what are the ethics of that? Is it okay to call these people up and say, hey, tell me what happened to you 35 years ago? And they're like, how the heck did you get my name? We need to make sure we do it properly. So this is kind of the situation I'm in right now.
It could cause some regression or something where somebody like want to like, I don't know, jump out of a window or something.
I know. You never know what you might
find.
But
I like that approach that you're willing to, you know, to to find these people and trying to get the answers, and that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, they wanna type and they wanna do, which I encourage internet research and stuff like that. Hey, I wouldn't know half the stuff I would if it wasn't for the internet. But to get the hard answers, you gotta take it to the streets. You know, it's like the gumshoe detective. You know, like an old noir series. You know, I mean, you know, same concept. Everything, but you gotta go out there and find the answers. Nobody's gonna give it to you. I learned that a long time ago, Mark. Nobody's gonna tell you nothing, and actually, they're gonna steer you the wrong way. And you're gonna have to find your own answers. And I've always said that from day one, a person's gonna find their own answers in life to be able to reach that higher state of knowledge. And just
that's
about
a good philosophy.
You know, not only. Go ahead.
No, that's all I was gonna say. I agree with you. It's a good philosophy.
Thank you. I try to think logical about things, but I never throw anything away or just discredit anything, because that's the problem, is just disinformation agents. And you go to these satire sites like Before It's News. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm looking at it every morning when I'm getting up drinking coffee and stuff, you know what I mean? Above Top Secret, and I do like that. There is some people that I don't like a lot of the comments that people post on there, but that's the thing, it's the internet voice. People everybody's got an internet voice, but the people that actually got something really to say, and then it travels around and people talk about it behind closed doors and stuff like that, that's when you know you're onto something. You've done something good for the day, or brought something to a totally different level where people will be like, well, I never thought about it like that. Maybe Mark's right, you know?
Yeah. You're right. If you can do that, then you've succeeded, definitely. Well, you know, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes with this case. What really impressed me about this gentleman was, you know, we're only supposed to go by the facts, but you can't really help but listen to what's in a person's voice and the way they're explaining, the way they're telling their story. And I could sense a lot of stress and fear in this man's voice when he was telling me the story. And this is something that happened to him 35 years ago. And it still stressed him out to think about it and remember it and talk about it. And that makes a big impact on me. It doesn't prove
that's
anything.
It doesn't prove he's telling
the truth.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry, what?
It's just like, don't get no more real than that. You can actually tell. It's just like, I hate making all these different references, but it's like when somebody's coming to kill you or beat you up or something. You can look in their eyes and you can tell what they're about to do. I believe that.
Yeah.
I don't know about you,
but
I mean, I really do. And the same thing goes when you're in talking to somebody and you're listening to them about their case. They're explaining to their account. Is the tone of voice, body language, all these different characteristics, you really have to pay attention to. And you're exactly right, and spot on that, man. And it's really, and I actually, you know, I need to look into this case. You can definitely send me some more information about this. It's really interesting. But I really feel bad for that guy, you know, for, because obviously he really did go through something, and it's,
mm-hmm.
bothered him all this time. That's powerful stuff, man.
Yeah, I was really struck by it, and there were just some really interesting details about the story. Like his lieutenant was right there when he saw this thing, so his lieutenant saw it too. And when it disappeared behind the trees, he just looked at his lieutenant, and his lieutenant said, "Don't say a word." And meanwhile, he looked up and down the road where the human fence was, and he said everybody was looking up in the sky and saying, "Holy cow, look at that. Did you see that?" So he knows everybody outside.
It was a mass sighting.
Absolutely a mass sighting, yeah. According to him, everybody saw it, and he said some people were even taking pictures of it. So, if we can track down, if I can get, you know, if MUFON's behind me on this, and, you know, we are working together as a team, and we can actually track down, you know, even one or two more people, who might remember something about this, you know, that could be significant. It really could be.
That would be important, Mark. It would be great. You know, I got to tip my hat off to you again because I just don't think there's really a lot of people. I mean, there's a great female presence in the UFO field. You know, there's a lot of great speakers. There's a lot of great investigators, boots on the ground investigators, and you know, and the honesty of, you know, about it all is taking what we know and being able to process that information.
Yeah.
Process the information and and be able to handle that knowledge once it's acquired through your research. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of people, they their answers, and when they find them, they don't know how to act, or they start becoming mentally ill. Have you ever heard of anything like that, Mark?
No, I'm not thinking of any examples off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I just kind of like people just. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you a prime example for me, for instance.
Okay.
Okay. I know a lot about the, you know, UFO field, and I am, you know, I put myself a part of that, but I was really, I was studying cults and stuff like that. I told you about this, you know, but whenever I was doing that research, it's just like I got sucked into it, and not as in a participating, anything like that, but that's the only thing you're searching for, and then you find all these ties to, you know, military, Hollywood, music industry, government, human trafficking, you know, all these different cases. And then you see how the world really is and what's really going on, you know, with the, you know, different stuff, you know, New World Order and all this other stuff, and actually seeing how the world really works. Sometimes that could be a mental overload for some, and I think that could cause people to harm others or harm themselves, even, you know, because just some people, you know, and so, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Sam Maranto. He's
coming
to mind, and you know, and I asked him the same question. I asked him a question. I was like, Sam, you know, why don't you really, you know, think that people, you know, just pretty much just saying. Letting the people know about all of the UFO stuff and you know, the different, just the really crazy aspects of it. And then, you know, he's pretty much just saying, you know, a lot of people don't need to know because they don't know how to process that information.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, there's a lot, it causes a lot of confusion.
I'm just ranting. I'm just ranting. Just go ahead.
That's all right. No, I think, like I said, I think you made a good point. There's a lot of people can't process it, but what I think is happening when, you know, all of the UFO themed shows that are on cable TV right now, there is something like, I don't know, between 15 and 20, by my last count, 15 or 20 TV shows that deal with UFOs on a pretty regular basis. But you know what happens with those shows? I was telling you before that I've been getting all these historical cases to investigate through MUFON. All of those folks who call in those cases that have happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the reason they're doing it is because they saw one of these shows. They saw Hangar One or they saw Ancient Aliens, and they saw something on that show that reminded them of what they saw way back when. And so they think, holy cow, somebody else has had the same experience I have. I want to find out more. Maybe it's time I tell somebody what happened to me. So, you know, and the gentleman I was telling you about the guy who was in the Army at Fort McCoy, it was a total overload for him. He couldn't process any of that. He didn't know what to think about it. And I can tell you about another case. This is another historical case that I just interviewed the witness last week.
again, happened in central Wisconsin. In fact, it happened like 10 miles from Fort McCoy, but it happened many years later. It happened about 10 years later. The witness was about 11 years old. He was out camping with some friends. They were fishing and camping, and it got dark, and they were getting ready to go to bed. And the witness saw a star up in the sky that was kind of zipping around. It was behaving, you know, it was behaving kind of strangely. Stars aren't supposed to do that. So he starts flashing his flashlight at this star. And one of his friends on the campout got really scared and said, "Hey, stop that, stop that. We don't want them to know we're here." And sure enough, a couple minutes later, all of a sudden the tree that these kids are sitting under starts to whip around and twist around like it's in the middle of a hurricane, except none of the other trees around them are moving. It's just the tree that they're sitting under. And then after it starts whipping around like that, something high above the tree starts shooting these beams of colored light down at the ground. And he described it as, he said it was like light being shot out of a cannon. And so he and his buddies just gathered up all their sleeping bags and their fishing stuff, and they hightailed it home. Luckily, where they were camping was right in their neighborhood, so they didn't have to go very far. But they get home, they tell the big brother, parents were gone, so they tell his big brother what happened. They call the police. Believe it or not, the police actually sent out a patrolman to take a look at what happened and to listen to the kid's story, and he didn't make fun of the kids at all. He took them seriously, and he said, you know, "Well, thanks for the report. There's really nothing I can do, but if you see anything else unusual, you know, be sure and tell us." So that was the incident. But then after the incident, he said it felt like it was an invitation. And he goes, "Believe it or not, we went back out that very same night and we camped out under the stars, not right under that tree, but right over in the next lot beside it." So, you know, they kind of went back to see if they could see more, which I thought was interesting. But then he went on to tell me about how this event has changed all of their lives. And at that point, I started to, the original story of what happened when they were 11, it's a very compelling story. And again, I could hear in this guy's voice, I could hear this kind of a sense of relief that he was actually finally telling the story to somebody. But then the stories of what happened to him and his friends later in life, I kind of felt that I had to draw a line there, because there's no way to, he thinks there's some connections between these things, but there's no way to prove that. And there's no direct evidence that says that this thing that happened to them when they were 11 years old has affected their lives years later. So, that's where things get complicated. But again, this gentleman was dealing with exactly what you were talking about, though. It was this information, this like sensory overload that he and it's even worse because he was 11 years old when it happened, and he told me, he said, "It's not like we were scared. It's more like we just didn't know how to process what was going on. Like, that's why we ran home. We just didn't know. We just couldn't understand what was happening, and we just had to get out of there." So very much like what you're talking about.
Thanks. Hey, it's going to cut us off at any time. But, you know, what was interesting that you were saying, Mark, while we might have a few seconds left, is that you talked about the boys went returned to the spot. A lot of, in my personal, research, a lot of abductees wish that they could have this experiences again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I've seen that.
Yeah,
in a lot of different
definitely.
Things.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you sound like you have a lot more experience with it than I do, but I have definitely, I've heard that kind of thing from other witnesses before. It seems like it's a really powerful thing. You know, and sometimes it's just as simple as, maybe they don't go back to the same place, but they spend the rest of their life looking up at the sky all the time, wondering if they're going to see something again.
Exactly, and I've heard a lot of cases like that where they're just like, "Man, I wish it would happen again," you know, and saying stuff like that.
Yeah,
or, and that's what's really crazy. Mark, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I appreciate you coming on tonight.
It's
a pleasure.
Fun.
Hey, I want you definitely to come back, man. And hey,
I think
you're doing great. And I want you to keep the fight, keep doing what you're doing. Hey, great research, investigations, and pouring positive energy in the UFO community.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Lauren. I appreciate the compliments. You have a great night.
Hey, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining me. Till next week, all strange surrounding, secret universe.